I'm screwing this up right now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life. Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Above the Bar podcast. This is part two of our distiller series. Just a reminder, I got into this one because I watched the documentary on Hulu called Neat, and I thought this was pretty wild. So put the word out there on Facebook and on LinkedIn, who knows any distillers. And this one came from a good friend of mine, another Marine I've known, as we say in the Marine Corps, since Christ was a corporal. Snuff Daddy reached out and said, Murph, I got somebody for you. We can make this happen. Look, he's already giving it a woot woot. So today we have Roger Morantz with Marlin & Barrel Distillery. Roger, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So now, make sure I got this right. This is your launch year, right?
So we actually just reopened. So we moved six blocks from our original location. And whether it's six blocks or 600 miles, I never want to do that again. So, starting a distillery, easy, moving hard. We were like Noah's Ark with barrels, two by two on our forklift, six blocks, moved them all to our new location. So plus the paperwork, plus the opening, plus. So yeah, so for us, it's a relaunch. We worked on the opening for, I don't know, the better part of a year. And the city was the last, they were the long pole in the tent. And they gave us a call on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving at about 3:30 in the afternoon. And if you know the liquor business, you know that people like to buy booze for the holidays. And so it was a really big deal for us to get open for the holidays. And they called us right before that. And they said, you're good to go. And I didn't know if I was laugh or cry or throw up. So we opened officially again on Black Friday, soft opening, and we're still actually going to do a ribbon cutting and a formal grand opening and all of that. But yeah, we are open. We're producing. We still have paint and finish things. We've got a still to connect still. So there's still
to connect.
yeah. So there's still work, but we're doing our thing. And I don't know if anybody's ever had any kind of like separation from their normal routine in life for an extended period, but when you get back to doing what you do, it feels so good. So we're excited about it. And then that was Black Friday, and then about a month later, our bourbon turned 4 years old, which is a really big deal. It's a no age statement product. So okay. So we opened. We had the bourbon. We just had an event for the first time, and so we're getting our sea legs under us again. So
now, is that a bond? Because I'm learning words that I never knew I needed to learn. So is that a, since it's 4 years old, that makes it a bonded bourbon, right?
So we could offer bonded as a product type. So a long time ago, I guess let me take a half step back if you don't mind. So
yeah, sure.
So we make a lot of products. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit, but we make a rum and a whiskey and a bourbon. And so rum doesn't have a lot of high standards in terms of label requirements, but whiskey and bourbon sure do. And so part of the reason is, when whiskey got going in this nation, there was a lot of, I think there was some measure, enough unscrupulous characters that you never know what you got, in the barrel shipped down the Mississippi or whatever. So the bonded idea was a congressional act that required for you to have a bonded product. It had to come from your distillery. It had to be 100 proof, and it had to be aged for 4 years. And so you knew when you had a bonded product, it was like the real deal. You got a good full bottle of booze in there. And it was a way to kind of strengthen what distillers were doing in a legal sense. So you got a decent product. Today, I would guess most bourbon that's sold is not bonded. It's in the 80 proof version, 84, 86, 90, so on. So anything under 100 proof is not a bonded product, even though it comes from a bonded warehouse. I'm currently in our distillery and looking 20 something feet across our tasting room into our bonded space.
Which, so that you're in there right now.
I'm in our tasting room right now. Yep.
Okay.
And our tasting room is a kind of an adjunct in the building to our actual production facility. So,
cause I was like in the background, I was already seeing, I was like, man, I thought that was the bar inside the house. I was thinking for a minute. I was like, man, that's pretty impressive.
I'd never get my kids up in the morning.
I have moments when I don't want to get mine up to start with, you know,
only Monday through Friday. That's how I feel about it.
God. So you were generous enough to provide us with a couple of these things. So as you can tell, I'm a little salivating already. So next week we've got another distiller. So we kind of stepped this process through. So last week, I don't know if you caught last week or not. Those guys, they've started the bottle, but they haven't released yet. You were my released, and we're getting back into the groove of things. And then next week we've got a group that's coming on that's been doing it for a good fair amount of time up here in New York. But I've never, and I've got my son with me sitting to my right, my twin. Neither one of us have ever had a Bloody Mary.
No,
I've just never, you know, I'm not a, like when I day drink, it's not, you know, I always just think of it like a day drinker, like,
yeah,
like a brunch kind of thing. Yeah, sure.
Sunday brunch.
Right. Yeah. So tell us, so we've got this one here. This is your Venture Vodka. Are you doing small batch stuff? Cause I see this one's got a 104 on it. Yeah. And then we've got, tell me about this, the hot sauce folks also.
Yeah. Yeah. So everything we do here is small batch. I mean, you know, it's funny to me when we see big liquor labels say small batch, you know, it's like 5-hour production. So it's all, you know, it's all relative, right? Whatever you say small batch is, it's small batch. But for us, literally, you know, if you put a 150 bottles together in a batch, that feels small batch to me. So everything we do is small batch. We've got, I guess, bourbon in full 53-gallon barrels, but we're only going to pop the cork on one, not like 100. So, yeah, so it's all small batch. For us, the pepper vodka is actually in-house. It's our number one seller.
Really?
Yeah, it's our number one seller. Now, we do liquor in every major liquor category except tequila or agave spirits. We, you know, we can't do spirit.
What's the difference between a spirit?
So we do whiskey, bourbon, gin, vodkas, rums. Our cellos are a liqueur. There are many liqueurs, but that's at least in the category. We just don't do anything from the agave plant. So basically, except that. The majority of our products are flavor rich products. Now, let me see. I sent you a cello, which is flavorful. I sent you a pepper, which is a flavored vodka. And I think I sent you a flavored rum also.
So we were going to, I've got to ask you. So this is the Blossom. And my son and I were talking about it. So believe it or not, I am the child of my parents owned a liquor store and a bar as I was growing up as a kid. And I'm not talking like a little, like neighborhood corner bar. I'm talking like it had a dance floor. It had a raw bar, like the whole nine yards. And the bar actually had a liquor store attached to it, also separate from the other one that they owned.
Yeah.
So I grew up with around us, but I couldn't tell you what makes it a liqueur and what makes it, because like my dad was a big Drambuie drinker.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell you what makes something a liqueur and what makes something not a regular liquor.
Yeah. So you'll notice the proof's a little lower on the tangerine. Tangelo is what I sent you.
Okay.
And the tangerines, actually, the fruit we use actually come from our backyard here on Amelia Island.
It's so legit, like legit from Florida.
Yep, we hand zest all the fruit, all that, all of that. And so it's basically, think of this like a vodka base, high proof vodka, is a neutral spirit.
Okay.
You add a flavor agent, which are the oils from the zest of the fruit. In this case, it's tangerine. And then you bring it to proof and sweeten it, which is the liqueur part. So it has like a simple sugar to it. So it's got alcohol, the zing of the acidic, flavorful tangerine, and then a sweetness to it. And for us, we make four tangerines. We do a lemon lime, we do a tangerine, we do an orange, and we do a grapefruit. The 800-pound category, or 800-pound gorilla in the category, is really limoncello. But we're not Italians, we're Floridians. So we do the other things that we can do with the product.
Okay.
And when you taste it, it will be, and compared to traditional limoncellos, it'll be about 60% of the sugars by design. That's our preference. A little more of the alcohol, the strength of the alcohol. It lets the flavor of the fruit shine rather than dull it with the sugars. And just a little bit, you know, chill it. You should, you know, on ice, or keep the bottle in the freezer or the fridge or whatever. And it's just super. The thing is, with all of our products, and we make a lot of products, there's no chem lab here. Everything with flavor comes from a natural food stock, and that shines through in the spirit. So that's, I think, and we're not the only ones like that. I think a lot of craft distillers, if they're really crafting something, in my opinion, you're going to get that thing that you really can't do at scale. And that's our way forward as a niche market.
You can smell. Like, so this is the vodka, if you can see it, folks.
Yeah.
My fancy glasses.
This is my, oh, wait, is that pepper vodka?
This is the pepper vodka. Told you, neither one of us have ever had a Bloody Mary. He made his first Bloody Mary. It's sitting next to me with a very appropriate glass.
Warning, that's too much.
I wasn't going to shoot this. Is it going to, like, burn my ass? Is that, like, the hot sauce side to it?
So we use a bird, B-I-R-D, bird pepper. Grows great here. I don't know if it's truly native or whatever, but it's something that you can find here in Florida. And we smoke those peppers.
Hold on.
He did it.
I haven't drank anything yet. You can't see my son, whose face just turned red, and he's got red hair, so his shit's matching right now, and he's walking around the bar like, is it spicy, son? Come around. Come see your father. Come to my pa.
I've had enough people at the tasting bar. I know what he looks like.
Nobody else does. Get in there. Yeah. Get in the camera. So, wait a second. So I'm about to taste this shit. Am I about to get jacked up?
So two comments. It's a lot of flavor and a lot of immediate heat, but it is not a punitive heat. It will not continue to build. It will not continue to punish you. You won't be searching for milk, you know.
Look, Chris, you're an alcoholic. I've known you long enough to know this shit.
Hey, but it takes a lot of heat to cut through the tomato for a Bloody Mary. Tomatoes.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Whoa.
We normally start with fellows here at the table.
Oh my God. Like, that's straight fucking hot sauce. I just shot Tabasco.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wow. Wow. And what's funny is so, like, I got the heat instantaneously on my tongue. Like, there was no bullshitting around, nothing. I got that heat right away. But there was like a sweetness.
Yeah.
Associate. What's the sweetness?
It's the meat of the fruit.
Oh.
Yeah. Or the pepper. Sorry.
Okay.
A little smokiness around also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I have to go ahead, because if y'all haven't figured it out, Roger was a prior service guy. Also,
I wore a camo for you.
He wore camo, but I did this the last time. I'll have to do this for you. Do you know what Army stands for?
Uh oh, no.
Aren't ready for Marines yet? And Robert just Vanzenberg just chimed in. He's a good friend of mine. He's a prior Army guy that I harass at every moment, anytime we see each other. Oh, so let's try. So this will be my first Bloody Mary also.
Oh, much so.
So let's see. Now, see, I like that.
Yeah.
That, see, now that heat.
Yeah.
Isn't as bad with the Bloody Mary. It almost tastes like, so from the shot, like, taste that, son. Yeah. Just taste that. So the big difference in the two is when you have just the Bloody Mary, it's more like the pepper, like peppery.
Yeah.
Because of the tomato, whereas in the shot, it was more like a straight, like, right to your tongue kind of thing. I like that.
Thanks.
Oh, that's
cool. We do see people sometimes, you know, a lot of people really do like heat. They like the pepper.
Right.
But they'll have like instead of a normal vodka tonic, they'll have the smoked pepper vodka tonic.
Oh, okay.
It loosens it a little bit. It's not so, you know, dramatic.
And no, that's different.
Yeah, they'll just nip on it.
Chris said, I popped my cherry. Chris, you wish.
It holds. Do you feel it still? It holds.
Yeah, like, right. So that's why I say it's more of like a peppery, I don't want to say Tabasco.
Yeah, no, it's different.
It's not that vinegary, because I always think of Tabasco and I think more of the vinegary kind of taste to it.
Yep.
But my son's pacing like he's trying to decide. You okay? Are you all right? I like to abuse my children. This is good for me.
So you guys just broke the seal. You're now bloody, you know, you've had Bloody Marys. But for Bloody Mary fans, most of them will add heat to their concoction. So
okay, you
know, for us, it's just two ingredients, like a mix and then the vodka. And then it you know, people generally like the heat with the cocktail. So, and that's what makes a good cocktail, a balance, you know, a balance between alcohol, flavor, texture, you know, everything. So
why am I putting celery in this thing? I don't even know why.
You know, so celery is just like something you can chew on to kind of reset the palate.
Okay. Because, like, yeah. I see these Bloody Marys on TV, and they're like, there's like a turkey hanging out of it and like a lobster and like crazy. Out of control.
It's crazy. We haven't announced it yet, so I guess I'm breaking news. But here where we're at, a long time ago, bars used to compete, do a Bloody Mary competition, and we're going to sponsor another competition.
Nice.
In March. And it's crazy. It's so creative what people can do. And I think part of it's a cocktail and part of it's whatever sits on top of the cocktail. And it's kind of fun, you know? So
now, see, one of my favorite Florida drinks is out in Pensacola, because I love P-Cola.
Yeah.
Is and we're going to get into something because I have a connection to your neck of the woods also, is the Jubilee out there. They have like a whole festival, the whole nine yards in P-Cola. Now, you're in Fernandina, right?
We are. Yep. Just north of Jacksonville.
If you've never been to Fernandina, folks, I highly recommend it. I highly recommend going to St. Augustine. It is amazing area. It's beautiful out there. You definitely have to get out down there and see Marlin and Barrel. Check out the distillery. But you're going to laugh in a moment, Roger. So you hear this is a mid-Atlantic accent, if you haven't figured it out yet. It's not Southern. But I have roots. My grandmother used to live in Yulee.
Oh, across the bridge.
And I still have cousins that live in the country. Now, look, I have family in off the base of Rome Mountain in Elizabethton, Tennessee, near Black Bottom.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound much more country than that. But I'm going to mention two places to Roger, and we'll see how country he thinks these are. I have family in Callahan and Hilliard. See, look, he couldn't even say anything.
So I think Callahan's got a grocery store now.
Oh, that's impressive.
Or they're getting one, Hilliard. They don't have a Piggly Wiggly even. I mean, I think it's really just still at. I mean, maybe a Family Dollar.
Everything's got a Family Dollar.
Well. The average lot size is a little larger out there.
The 301 Speed Trapville.
Yeah. Drove it the other day. It's
Oh, you is it bad?
Well, yeah, you know, yeah.
We're unique. I mean, but I'll tell you, my aunt wanted it. She passed away many moons ago. Loved her to death. We didn't talk about country folk. She made the world's best fried chicken gravy. Mm. Like, it was like drinking fried chicken. It was amazing. That's my mom's side of the family. They're very, like, my family's very different. So my mom's side of the family is super country. My dad's side of the family are all like, they are. There's a big group of them in North Carolina, but they're much more like grew up in Baltimore City kind of stuff, things of that nature. It's notorious. You have no idea how notorious they are. Now we're going to get into, now we've done this. We've done, let's see, who's it? Oh. Your wife is on this. Hi, Heather. Heather, I was hoping that you would get a chance to come on here, but I understood your reasoning for sending Roger away. You know, I understand. We have to have bar talk at a bar. I get it. Completely accept this. But so now, other than so this vodka is more of a mixer. And one of our, you know, celebrity guests asked a great question, Amanda Love, and I might have missed it, and I apologize if I did. What other, is it just this vodka, or do you have grouped vodkas? What, you know?
We do four vodkas. We have a standard, crisp, clean, neutral vodka, which I think when people just think of vodka, they think of, you know, maybe a vodka from its, you know, Polish or Russian traditions. That kind of thing where it's just it's smooth to drink and just the warmth, the afterglow of the spirit hits you, you know, at the end. So we have one of those. We actually have a what we call a craft vodka. We call it craft because it is made from the sugars of molasses. And it's super hard because of how many fusel oils are in the actual base of molasses. If you think about what molasses is, it is an oily substance. And it's very difficult to extract all of that in either the distillation or post-distillation filtration process. So there's a touch of sweetness and the essence of molasses in the vodka. Now, the way the code reads is vodka should be flavorless, odorless, flavorless and odorless, but that's subjective. So, you know, your palate might pick up something mine doesn't. And if you taste the difference between potato or wheat or corn based vodkas, you know, there are subtle differences. So anyways, we have a craft vodka. We only sell it in house and it almost starts with the sweetness of rum because it comes from molasses, but it finishes with that warmth at the end. And to be honest, it's crazy. It will not work in the marketplace because it's probably a standard deviation out of what people expect. But here it's like a cult following. People come after me with pitchforks if I don't have it in stock. It's like a really, I don't know. It's like a thing. So we have that. So that's two. We have the pepper vodka. And then in our area, we grow, obviously we have lemons and we have in this area, a ton of blueberries in Southern Georgia. Really? And from kind of central to North Florida. So we do a blueberry lemon zest vodka. That's our vodka lineup.
Now that sounds pretty amazing.
Super refreshing. There's a ton of the natural flavor once again that comes out. We again zest the fruit for the and blueberry. It's not like a high sugar content fruit. There's a touch of sweetness to it, but then the zip of the lemon zest helps balance that. And it's just a great combination. We just, you know, come. I mean, we're warm weather 10 out of 12 months down here. So it's like a super refreshing vodka ingredient for a lot of cocktails.
So that sounds good. Now, we're going to get ready. We're going to get in because I have so many thoughts for this rum. Because I love the idea that it's vanilla bean espresso flavored rum. They don't do much. So I love good convenience stores. I know that might sound crazy to say, but living outside of Philadelphia and living in Baltimore, we had Royal Farm in Baltimore, which does the most amazing fried chicken, and Wawa is just amazing. I know you guys have some down there in Florida. My son used to live in Boca, and they had one there. But what they do have here is Stewart's, and Stewart's has the most amazing cream soda. Mm. And all I could think of was like how amazing this rum would be in some cream soda. Take a look at this, folks. This is, again, espresso, vanilla bean espresso. That's my accent again. Espresso. And we're doing the small batch again. This is batch 70. That even looks, correct me if I'm wrong, is that somebody's pen?
This could be mine.
Hold on. Because I just realized, like at first I thought it was like printed on there.
Oh.
And I just realized it, like that's an indention.
Yep.
Wow.
We hand label, we fill bottle by bottle, and we got a little whiteboard with every batch. So, you know, the next batch after 7 is 71, we erase it, we put 71 on the board, so on and so forth.
Now, what define? Now this is kind of because I want to hear more about the rums because my son, he lives in Puerto Rico half the year, so he brought me up, and I'd never even heard of this, a Puerto Rican sipping rum,
yeah,
and that was really good, and we enjoyed that. I've got I've had Captain, and I've had this one and that one, one that I really liked that I had a long time ago was called Tortuga,
yeah.
So I've had different rums, but with something like this, what, I guess, we'll start with what makes a rum a rum.
Sure. So rum is a distilled product that comes from sugars of the sugarcane stock. So what does that mean? So fresh pressed sugarcane. We grow some down here. I actually just met about 2 weeks ago a guy who farms and then has all the pressing equipment. So I think next season we're going to do a fresh pressed, a rum from fresh pressed juice. A lot of distillers don't do it because it starts to naturally ferment right away. It's just like ready to go.
Rum is?
Fresh pressed.
Oh, okay.
Most rum that's ever been produced really comes from molasses. So refineries will fresh press the juice. They'll put it in a vat. They'll heat it. They'll spin it. They'll extract the thing that becomes white sugar. And as soon as they take any measure of sugar out of that fresh pressed juice, the rest becomes some type of molasses. Grade A, do it more. Grade B, do it more. Grade C. And blackstrap molasses is at this generic point where no more sugar will come out.
What kind of molasses?
Blackstrap.
Okay.
So all of our rums have a blackstrap molasses. And
sorry, I never made it past 13.
the proof vodka you had. I didn't juice your bottle.
So all your rum has a black strap, huh? Right on it. Is it right on the? I'm sorry. I told you I didn't make it past 13.
So we do a light rum, which a lot of fruity rum drinks come from. We do a sipping rum, which is an aged rum. We do a pineapple. We do 103 proof. 53 is the highest proof allowed in the state of Florida. And then we do this vanilla bean espresso rum, which people, I think, either drink as a cordial or they're going to mix it with like, yeah, it's like a Black Russian alternative kind of element. Rum is sweet, vanilla is sweet, but espresso is bitter, right? So again, there's a balancing act going on inside the beverage. It kills actually in December because people add it with eggnog.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah. So,
John, this is a rum we're talking about. We're talking about rums.
That's right.
He asked, is this whiskey or rum we're talking about? I said rum. But, you know, so this has like, the best way I can describe it, like the aftertaste to it, reminds me of chewing on a coffee bean.
Yeah.
Like as a kid, my mom would like have like the whole coffee beans or buy the chocolate covered coffee beans.
Yeah.
And that's what it reminds me of is that coffee bean kind of flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, you know, the thing is you can get like coffee vodkas and you can get certainly coffee liqueurs. But they're all just like super sweet, doped up, you know, sugar doses. That is alcohol and the espresso essence. Yeah. Yeah. Tequila. Somebody does a tequila also.
Yeah.
But rum has a natural sweetness, I think, that balances with the espresso.
Yeah, absolutely.
Espresso, that aftertaste. Like if you really enjoy coffee and espresso, that's what you want. you want that aftertaste. You want the glow of that. So,
and it doesn't, you know, what's I like about this, and I've had it with some rums where like you really get the rot gut to it. You know what I mean? Like the Military Special. Do you remember those from, this is like, I got the first little bite from the initial sip of it, like you do with any kind of liquor.
Yep.
But this, after that, it's, you could sip on this, you can enjoy this. This isn't going to, you know, wreck your whole, you know, ability. You're not, it's not one of these, I guess the best way is we've all done it where somebody hands you a drink and you're like, they're like, this is amazing. It's so good. It's so smooth. And you sip it and you're like, oh, this is so great. I love it. And you're like doing everything you can to be polite. But not that, like, you can sit and sip on this and enjoy. You what do you think, son? You want to? No, yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
So you can have it. Think about this. Like, I don't know if anybody likes, like, if you like a porter or a stout,
mm-hmm.
have it as a handshake for that. Or just a little, like, half and half or some creamer with it. You can do all kinds of things. So.
See, now I like amaretto in my coffee.
Yeah.
Do you do an amaretto? Let's ask that question. Do you do an amaretto?
We don't.
Okay. I got to ask because I just like amaretto. I have like two or three bottles. You know what? It's funny. So vodka is a funny thing for me. So I don't like going back to that for a minute. I don't drink a lot of it, but it always seems like everyone's go-to. And I'm just thinking like I would rather, like I enjoyed that, you know, after it was in something and it created like the pepper for me. But the other thing is I really like the vanilla bean. And we're going to get into this liqueur, but I got to ask you, like you're not coming into the market with, you know, here's my really special granddaddy's recipe for whatever liquor. You're coming in the house with a full suitcase of things. What, you know, you did, how many years did you do, Roger?
Five.
So you did 5 years in the Army.
Yeah.
What were you doing after that?
So I went to graduate school, and then I did 20 years in corporate planning, basically.
So where does – how do we go from corporate planning to this? Because this is – I mean, this is no bullshit. This is legit, good, high quality. Again, we used to joke around in the service. You remember them days of Military Special was the jug was about this big and made of plastic. And you could, you know, for $3, you could get any liquor you wanted.
Yeah.
So how do we get into this level of craft? Like, were you always doing stuff at the house? What happened here?
Not at all. So I grew up, I moved around a lot as a kid. I grew up poor, frankly, and I joined the military as a way out. And I got my undergrad in 2.5 years at night school in service, went and got my graduate degree, and then spent 20 years building a career in corporate planning. And towards the end, I was living in Dallas, commuting back to Jacksonville, where my wife and kids and her family are in the area. And the company I work for said, you got to move. And I took my Floridian wife to Dallas, and she gave the input on that idea that I need. And you know, when you're young, you are the job. The job is you, and you just you're thankful for that. But we were at a point where we, you know, especially with kids, we just felt like there were some other things we really had to be responsible in thinking about what was the best situation. And so we kind of arm wrestled. And like most things in our household, whether it's my wife's on. So sorry. What's the color of the room?
Tell me all, Roger. Tell it all. Heather will never know.
Right. What are we going to do next? You know, eventually she won, and I said, you know, I'll leave that career, that thing, that identity in me, to do something else. But it has to be meaningful. It has to be something for the rest of my life that I'm interested in and I want to enjoy. And so we talked about a lot of ideas, and all of the ideas were kind of craftsmanship oriented, whether it was woodworking, and we looked at beer, but there's a lot of beer out there done for a long time. More people will do it, so I don't want to rain on anybody's parade. But 6 years ago, when we were talking about it, there were only a couple hundred craft distilleries in the U.S. And I, God knows I drank enough liquor. So, you know, I knew that, but I didn't know anything else. And so I brought the idea up to her and she said, well, how do I know you're not going to blow something up or blind somebody? I mean, the idea sounds good, but what are you doing? And so I looked around, I played with some things in our garage. I did start a fire. I mean, it wasn't pretty. And then I came upon this outfit in Europe, and they made small scale automated professional distilling equipment. And they did consulting, and I came back to her and I was like, hey, you know, I want to go see this place, and see if this is like for real. And she said, you should go because the idea is good and I don't want to move to Dallas. So I said, that's great. Cause I bought a ticket to Amsterdam. And she said, let me get this right. I don't want to move to Dallas. And now my husband's going to Amsterdam to make booze with somebody we don't know. And I said, yes. And she said, everything there is to know about alcohol production. And so that was the beginning. And I brought a little, I mean, technically you're not allowed to distill. So I'm saying theoretically, I brought a little 13 gallon fully automated fractional column still back into our, basically our laundry room. And I ran that thing for a year plus while I built out the first distillery, and we launched with two products. And today we've got 17 different ones in wow. different variations of sizes. And like I said, our first 4 year aged, and we got some rum that's five, and you know, I mean, so it's, you know, it's all just a one step at a time. And the final kind of push was, you know, I said, we're reasonably successful people. You know, we're not dumb, and we care, and we try hard, and we're certainly hard workers. We should be successful at something else we try. There's no reason to think that we can't. And we may start in a dark room and bump our toes on, you know, as we find our way to the light switch, but we're going to find it. And I think that's exactly how we felt the whole time. It's a super hard, very competitive business, but you know, we don't need to take over the world. You know, I had a job where I fought for money and power and title, and now I'm just trying to make booze that people enjoy. It's way more rewarding in that sense. So
sounds a lot more relaxing.
Oh God, it's so much harder. It's so much hard work, but the reward is so much more gratifying. You know, I joke, they used to give me both Saturday and Sunday off every week, and they don't do that anymore. But at the same time, I get to come in at 8 something at night and drink booze and, you know, and enjoy the fruits of the labor. So
it doesn't sound like a bad gig to me.
It's not a bad gig.
So Chris and I had the same kind of question. I don't think I've ever met anyone that went to Amsterdam for booze.
Well, the U.S. pot industry is, you know, following yet still. So, I mean, I won't close out here. Career changes, but
I've talked to so many people about that. That's a whole show in and of itself. I actually got a guy here in a few weeks that's what he advocates for. He's like a lobbyist for that industry.
Yeah,
but you know, it's I'm learning more and more about these different spirits and what's out there and how people get into it. I find this, and the other side to this with you that I find completely fascinating. Is that you had kind of hit a stride. If you were 20 years into a field, companies telling you, we want to send you out to Dallas, normally that means they're moving you into bigger and better. So, I mean, I got to give it to you, brother. That takes big cojones to just turn around and say, nope, not only am I not going to stay in a field that I know that I can be successful in, yeah. I'm going to make a hard left and do something that seems like, not even that you were into,
yeah,
it seemed like it would be fun.
Yeah.
Bro, that takes a lot.
Thanks. I joke there's a fine line between brave and stupid, and I'm still deciding which end of the line. But you know, to be fair, we only get so many turns around the sun. And I had done what I did before, and I was good at it, and I knew I was good at it. And so, you know, I think a lot of people, you grow up, you do what your parents tell you to do. Then you do the things they think they you know, what you think they would want you to do at some point in your young adult. And then from then on, you just keep taking the next best door in your life. And this really opening a distillery in a small business, this was a chance for me to make my first independent decision. And I'm so grateful for that. Even if, I mean, we, you know, we're successful, to be honest. We have a solid platform. We make a lot of really good spirits. We're the number one thing to do in a tourist destination on TripAdvisor. It's a lot of good things that we
really
built out of nothing. Yes.
Hold on. But now, that's, I got to pause you for a second. Like, I'm going to tell you, folks, Fernandina's got a beautiful beach. That's a beautiful area to be down in Florida.
It's a great place.
To be the number one destination, that's monstrous. That's huge.
Well, we give free booze and samples, and we have restrooms. So, you know, and air conditioning in Florida. So those are three pluses for us. But
wow, look at that, man. He hits all of it. Air conditioning, restrooms. Man, that's everything you need.
Right.
That's like hitting the lottery in Florida.
Yeah. But even if we fail, I personally will never, I mean, we've already won. My wife and I, we now own this, right? So it's a veteran-owned business because of me. It's a female-owned business because of her. And I don't do my thing and she doesn't do hers. We do this thing together. And so we've bonded as a couple and a family. And so there's all these ancillary things that come with owning a small business that have been super fulfilling beyond just making good spirits. So
now while you were talking, we broke open the Blossom. So
on the nose, it's good, right?
So one of the things I'm really noticing in what you have, it feels like Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know any other way to put it. So like just kind of going around the table here, when I drank the pepper, it's heat, it's Florida, it's that Latin heat, Florida kind of vibe. You then have this espresso bean rum, you know, you already got the islands down there, and now you got this espresso, which has a very Cuban kind of vibe to it because it's a coffee thing. And this is very Florida, the orange groves, you know, the vibe is there, brother.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's the beauty of what's going on in craft spirits.
Like it's very, I'm definitely digging. Like, again, I feel like this is something I could sit down a cocktail, either straight or a cocktail made out of this.
Yeah.
Sitting down. So I'm going to make a slight right. Hopefully we'll see if Heather's listening. So how long have you been in Jacksonville?
So we were living north of here in southern Georgia for 9 years, and we've been living here for 4 to 5 years.
Okay, so you wouldn't have never been to Shades then. Never mind, we're good.
Heather.
Is Heather from Jacksonville?
She's from Inverness.
So right around here. So Heather, if you're still listening, have you ever been to Shades? Let's see. So that's the only club I was ever in Jacksonville, Florida, and it was a very unique experience that again, off air we could have this conversation, but Shades is the only club I've ever been into, and I was Florida does like a lot of other places. Did what she say? 5 years here and Amelia Island. Okay, so like Florida is like North Carolina. You could be 18 to go into bars. You just can't drink. You can dance in the clubs and do all those kind of things. Like North Carolina has that. So I was like 19 years old, and this club was called Shades. You have to look it up. The one side of it was a male review. The other side of it was a female review. And in the middle of it was a bar. So the female strip side stayed that way all night long. But when the club was done, or when the male review was done, they pulled back a giant curtain and opened up the dance floor. And here's 19-year-old me with nothing but women that were disappointed in seeing me after they had seen this review. And I was okay with it completely.
I would like to know if Heather's been to Shades.
Do not let this be somehow where I started a problem.
No,
But I was just there, like... So what's the next step here? So we've got a tasting room, we've got everything else, we've got these great spirits, 17 different ones over at Marlin and Barrel. People can find them. Now, how long is it going to just stay as a Florida, Southern Georgia kind of thing? When are we going to see this other places?
So it's a good question. So we've just opened this new facility. It's 13,000 square feet. We're producing with the tasting bar. So last year, especially with COVID, I mean, it's monumental to still be here, frankly, and opening this place, which we own. So it's a huge accomplishment for us. In this year, we look forward to expanding into one or two more states. And the thing is about expansion is, you know, it's one thing to ask a bar or a liquor store to buy one case or two cases and ship it off. But the reality is we have to be, you know, we're responsible. We feel like we're responsible for the success of those bottles. So we have to do the things marketing and promotions and sales wise to make sure that those who take a chance on us as a new brand and a new product are successful. And so that takes resources. And so, you know, the new way to build a business in America is to, you don't even call it money, you raise capital and you raise a bunch of it and then you build whatever your thing is out and you open. But the old way to build business, and I think a craftsman way, and maybe the way my grandfather would have built a business, is bottom up. And so Heather and I are building this one earned dollar at a time, and we scale our expenses to our income, and we save for rainy days, and we make the best spirits we can, and we're patient with the things we have in the barrel. And over time, I feel like when we provide the experiences that we provide and the tours, and we're part of the community the way that we are, that that we'll be rewarded with the continued opportunity to expand. And that's how we look at the business.
See, I love it. Like that's, you know, that's because you care. This isn't, hey, we're trying to build this up so we can turn around and we can sell it and we can move on to the next thing.
Yeah, no.
It's not like a PE type thing, or you're just trying to build it and run away and, you know, create the brand and sell it off to like a Seagram's or somebody like that to come in and have your name. But
right.
You know, other than that, there's no element to it. I love it. I mean, this is a very unique, and these are unique flavors. I'll tell you right now, I've never, you know, probably the only thing similar is like you and I talked about was the vanilla bean espresso. But
yeah.
Other than that, I've never tasted these type of flavors with these kind of drinks. Like I said, this blossom, you know, it's a little fruity. I'll be a little fruity for a minute. I'll be all right. Be okay.
Well, we see the cellos in, like, think of it with like a boosted mimosa. Or our orange cello instead of triple sec in your margarita or in an old fashioned. I mean, we see it used in cocktails because it is sweet. You can taste the sweetness,
no, but yeah.
Not syrupy. And so it can get put into a variety of cocktails. You know, the lemon lime here is like a boozy Mountain Dew. I mean, it's all kind of.
I love it. A boozy Mountain Dew. I love the sound of it already.
Who doesn't like that?
You know, you can go ahead and get that boost of energy and fall down all at the same time.
We call that Friday night.
Oh, I might have to, you know, I have to find a way to make a road trip. We bought an RV this year, so we'll have to load the RV up and make a trip down there. I can blink and get through Callahan and Hilliard and see my family, you know, and we'll make
bring
our way.
Bring What's them that?
Oh
bring
yeah, we'll bring them all. That you have no idea, like the size. My mother is one of nine.
Oof.
And we our family goes from. I actually have an uncle that lives in Sturgis, lives in Sturgis, not like, oh, I live in the Dakotas. No, no, no. He lives there. So yeah, we cover from all the way out there, all the way to Florida. My dad's side, I actually used to have family down in Miami, but yeah, we'll have to, I would love to make a trip out there. Now, is there any thoughts? And this just kind of crossed my mind, cause you're talking about all these things that this pairs well with. What about like a restaurant or a food service or anything like that?
So we have in this new facility, we've got a large lot that we own that's adjoining the building. And then there's another piece of the building, a separate entity, a separate address and everything. And so we've always thought that we're going to, when we bought this, have a indoor-outdoor bar. And so you can come, you can play games, you can watch the game, you can do whatever. And we're still kind of defining the specifics of that, but really make this property a more complete destination. But, you know, the easiest thing to knock a company off course is to overinvest in the wrong thing. So we want to just make sure that we are ironclad in our thoughts, that the investment and the spend is sized with the opportunity, and that we do it right. So we, you know, we just opened, we're still working on that piece, but, you know, ultimately, I mean, we're on an island. There's only so many outdoor areas to recreate. And I think the investment holds a lot of promise. So.
See, I love like little tapas, little tacos or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, a fire extinguisher for that vodka, for it bust your ass. You could sell toilet, like, oh God. Like, I'm telling you folks, that like kicked me right in the taste buds. Like that was that one was brutal. Like I needed the blossom just to kind of cool it down after all that.
The sweet and the heat. We know there's a restaurant that does a ceviche with the vodka actually. You know,
really?
Yeah, it's a good flavor additive to it. So
I love ceviche. Ceviche is because anything seafood, I'm down for it.
Yeah.
I actually had do you ever watch get them, the alligator hunter guys.
Oh yeah.
The one that always wears overalls is I follow a page on Facebook called Southern Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, it's the only time this has ever happened to me where I made a comment on a thread and it went out of control. So I commented on the thread that the only way to eat crabs is to steam them. That's it. Huh. That boiling, I don't care where you're at and who's listening.
Yeah.
If you boil crabs, just throw them out. Stop wasting your money. That's unacceptable. You have garbaged those blue crabs.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Yeah.
So I made a comment that the only way to eat crabs was to steam them. And you'd have thought that I was starting the next civil war on this guy's website. Like people were like, you're out of your mind. You Yankees don't know. And I'm like, you don't know geography. If you're calling me a Yankee, you don't know geography.
Yeah.
I live south of the Mason-Dixon.
No, those are fighting words though.
Oh God. I was like boiling crabs is garbage. Like, yeah. See, but I'm really enjoying this. Like I've lucked out. I am so happy I've done this distiller series and I'm so happy you guys came on with us because, you know, at this point I have a lot of places so far to travel across the country and just get good and toasty, stay warm without a blanket.
It's, you know what? So let me just make a quick comment.
Yeah, please.
Small beer has been going on for like 25 years. And when it started, the playing field was open. I think America makes the best beer now because we've had all this space and opportunity. But before then, what was an exotic beer? Heineken? You know, we just right. And now we've got like barrel-aged sours. I mean, it's really amazing what happened in the beer world. And the same 20 or 25 years behind beer, but the same thing is going to happen with spirits. We do not have the same opportunity because there's a lot of really good alcohol out there, really great bourbons, really great everything. But who's making a tangerine cello like what you just tasted? Yeah, no. And so it's not just me. I mean, there's 2,000 plus distilleries out there, and we're not all in the same place at the same time, but great things are going to come from the community of distillers that are working on this thing right now in America. And I think it's super exciting to be a part of it.
Well, you said it with the bourbon. I would love when the bourbon's ready to bottle, let me know. I'll Venmo it to you. I would love to try it because I'm just starting to get into the bourbon piece to things. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this before. That's the most highly regulated product in the United States is bourbon.
Yeah.
Nothing is more regulated by the FDA than bourbon. And that blows my mind. But there's this whole thing with it, and you can talk to this, is it took you 4 years to be able to say, I can open this cask.
Yeah.
Now you start getting into the next piece, and what is it, 21 years for an aged bourbon? Is that what it is?
So the thing on aged bourbon has actually changed over time. So bourbon was America's number one selling spirit, let's say in the 80s. And then vodka and flavored vodkas came out in the 90s and 2000s. And they actually shut some rick houses, closed down production, you know, squeezed bourbon out of bars to some degree. Oh, wow. When bourbon was popular before vodka, if you had a aged bourbon over 8 years, it was too old. I think a lot of people consider a sweet spot somewhere around 6 to 8 years. At 2 years of age, you can call it a straight bourbon. If you make it with rye, straight, for whatever the grain is. But straight bourbon at 2 years. At 4 years, you do not have to put an age statement. You don't have to tell people on the label how many years it's been aged. Anything younger, the youngest drop under 4 years, you have to disclose that on a label. But I think the government basically feels like after 4 years, it's properly aged. If you want to, you can put it. You don't have to.
Do what you need to do.
Right. So for us, having a 4-year product, an NAS, no age statement, is a really big deal. But there are all kinds of derivatives this go around with bourbon that are super exciting, like secondary cask offerings. So finished in a port barrel, finished in a toasted barrel, double oak, all kinds of cool things. And so, you know, we're deciding what to do with the stock we have that is properly aged. And I think it's, you know, it's a big deal for a small company to get to that point. We're actually just proud to have. I mean, there's so few Florida straight bourbons, and you know, we're one of those. And for this little community, I mean, you know, we did it, and it's got our city name on it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're happy.
That's so, you know, and it's just so unique, your area compared to up here. See, so you have so many different fruits up here. The gentleman we had from Newcastle, a lot of apple stuff.
Yeah.
Apple in this area where we're at used to be the number one hops grower in the entire country. Mm. And we got beat up during Prohibition, and they had some other stuff, but it's all coming back because, like, Brewery Omegang is up here.
Yeah.
For beer side to it. Yeah. So to see you, and that's their big thing is, you know, they're still trying to keep with local products, but to see you doing it is so impressive. And staying true to your roots and staying true to that Fernandina area. Folks, when you look at these bottles, it's right there. It's Florida, you know? You know, it's pretty impressive, you know, the entire piece to it. And I love it. So right now, if somebody wanted to go out and they wanted to find Marlin and Barrel, what do they got to do to find Marlin and Barrel?
Well, they can come here, of course. But we also have a vendor we work with, caskcartel.com, and they're a liquor store, and they ship to almost every state in the union. So if they're interested, caskcartel.com.
Spell that out. Cask Cartel.
CASKCARTEL.com.
So you tell me if I spelled that right when it comes scrolling across the screen here. Let's see. And there we go. Is that proper? Cask Cartel?
Yeah.
All right, folks. So you can find it on Cask Cartel. What if they wanted to find you on social media? What are we looking for here?
Yep. We're on Facebook and Instagram. So, you know, Facebook, I guess, / Marlin Barrel. And yeah, you'll see all our quirky behavior there as well. So
who are you allowed to touch the Instagram?
I do sometimes.
we have to. Well, I actually got a TikTok recently, and I'm thinking, like, I'm doing these great TikTok videos, and I'm not. Yeah. And then my wife does like one duet video. I had her do one.
Yeah,
blows. And it's got 7,000 views. My wife is a beautiful woman. You know, everything about her, I love it, love her. But she's got like 7,000 views off of one video, and here I am, like, doing these videos and thinking I'm doing some shit. And then she just like, and it's a video of her reacting to a video. It's not even her doing anything.
If I could just make a recommendation, give your wife some of our tangerine cello and then ask her to do a TikTok video with it.
Well, she's watching right now because I know her. So you heard that, dear. The tangerine cello is down here, and we will see how that all works out. So we've got We can find you on Cass and Cartel if we're not in the area. Hopefully your state will have it delivered to you. You can always go down to Fernandina. I recommend you go down to Fernandina. It's a beautiful area. I enjoy it down there. You can find the these guys, Instagram, Facebook, all the different pieces. If you've enjoyed this show, though, and whatever platform you're listening, we always ask you to hit that like button. You can find us on Facebook at The Above the Bar Podcast. Our Twitter is at Above the Bar 4. Our Instagram is The Above the Bar Podcast. You can send us a message on Gmail, which is The Above the Bar Podcast at gmail.com. And we still got the contest going on that sooner or later somebody other than me will buy one of my pieces of merchandise, because right now I'm the only person that buys them. But if you go ahead and you buy one of the pieces of merchandise, take your picture with the hashtag The Above the Bar Podcast. We will go ahead and the winner, after I have more than one person do it, I'll send you a gift bag. Also, make sure you check out the other shows on our new network. If you didn't realize it, we are now networked with the Earplug Network. The Podfather asked us to join, so we're on the Earplug Network. So this show will be heard all across that entire network on SoundCloud. You can find us, Earplug Network. Any final words there, Roger? It's on you.
You know what? We're grateful to be a part of the whole craft distilling movement that's going on. And I would just ask everybody out there to support local, support craft. And there's more to the world than big brands. So when you support local, you support yourself.
Love it. Support local, support yourself. All right, folks, be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.